You're listening to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Steve Cashel in for Connor McKnight. Hey, teachers, spend summer break at the ballpark. The next Teacher Appreciation Night is on Friday, June 23rd, as your White Sox take on the Oakland A's. Get specially priced seats in select sections for all teachers, faculty, students, and their families. Visit whitesox.com/teacher to get your tickets today. A couple of weeks ago, Ken Hawk Harrelson announced that he is stepping aside after this season as the TV voice of the White Sox. Steve Dahl had Hawk on his show to talk about his career and a few funny stories.
Can I tell you a funny story real quick? Yep. My son, Matt Dahl, did the Hawk alarm clock commercial, and his cohort drove down to Indiana so they could do it near Hawk's place, and it came out great, I thought. I thought it was really, really funny.
Very funny.
Police acts in bed, and he, stretch, come on, stretch! But Matt said afterwards, he was talking to you, and you said, you know, when did you get in or whatever? And he said, oh, last night. And you said, you should have called me. And that, I believe, is going to be one of the biggest regrets of his life, that he didn't know that he could call you and hang out with you down in Granger, Indiana for a night.
Well, it would have been three of us. It would have been Matt, myself, and Mr. Smirnoff.
Yeah, right. Well, I think he's familiar with it. He also has a relationship with the Russians.
All right.
First off, congratulations on a fantastic career. And, you know, I mean, we've known each other since back in the day when you were with Double D.
Oh, boy.
That was some fun. You guys had some fun.
That was really, yeah, you what?
Don Drysdale.
I miss that big guy. He was something. You know, we had so much fun together, and we argued half the time.
Right.
You know, and we almost got into it a couple of times. And we were here in Cleveland one time. We went over to Vern Fuller's restaurant. And This is before he met Annie. You know, when he met Annie, she made him stop smoking. She made him stop drinking. And, you know, she just kind of turned his whole life around. But before then, we got into an argument, and I was driving, and he was on one of our young pitchers. He was very tough on young pitchers.
Right.
I said, why don't you get off that guy? So we got into an argument. Finally, I said, you know, to hell with this. I said, let's just get it settled. So I pull a car off the road, jumps out, and he got out. And we got in there. We got face to face, and all of a sudden, I'm looking up at him, you know, and he looks down, and he, thank goodness he smiled. You know,
yeah, he's one tough customer.
We just hugged each other, but that was a lot of fun with Big D.
Yeah. I grew up a Dodger fan. I grew up in L.A., so one of my idols for sure. And okay. Now, so you're going to keep doing the road games this season, right?
Right.
And then next season, you'll come up and do some Sunday home games.
Yeah, Sunday day games and Sunday home games.
Yeah.
I'll do it. We don't know exactly what's going to happen yet because Jason's going to he's going to do a couple of series for me because I got some stuff to do, and I'm going to reciprocate with him, you know, because he's going to have some ESPN stuff he's got to do.
So it's
not a set thing right now. It's just a for the most part, it's just I'm not going to do any night games, except maybe when we play the Cubs. That's the only night game I'll do.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. That's good. So you're going to be around, is my point. I mean, we would still feel your presence, correct?
Yes. I'm going to be there, and I got I'll be coming up to the ballpark sometimes, you know, to meet and greet, so to speak, with some clients. And sign some autographs and take some pictures and sit there and tell some lies, you know.
Yeah, you got to. That's the best part of baseball.
It is.
The storytelling.
Exactly right. You know, I think this one writer, in fact, he wrote it not too long ago. I don't know what paper it was. Somebody sent me an email of the story. Said that two guys in baseball are not play-by-play guys. They're Vin Scully and Hawk Harrelson are two storytellers who do play-by-play.
Right.
And that's what the game, you know, the game is built on, first of all, great players. That's what the game of baseball is built on. And then it's built on great rivalries. You know, when you got the Sox and the Cubs, you got the Yankees and the Red Sox and Dodgers and the Giants. And then it's built on tradition. And we're a generational game that, you know, grandfathers can tell their grandchildren about. In some cases, great-grandfathers can tell their great-grandchildren about.
Right.
And other sports don't have that.
No.
And that's why I get a ton of fan mail. And most of the time, it's always, thank you so much for the stories about some of the guys in the past. And, of course, we can't exclude the youngsters. We have to tell them who some of these guys in the past were because they have no clue, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, the best part is it's a chance to talk to the youngsters about something that they want to listen to. So, it's as you said, it's a great way for generations to communicate.
Exactly. And I tell you what, guys, it's been such a great ride for me all these years. You know, I want to go to January 1st, 2020, and that'll put me in that club. Not many guys are in.
Right.
Vin's in there. Scully's in there, you know. Don Zimmer's in there. I think Lasorda's in there. Dave Garcia's in there. People who have been in professional baseball all the parts of eight decades.
Man, oh, man.
Yeah.
Now, that's a long time.
That's impressive, man.
You can't be in that club unless you have really loved the game. You know, and if you've loved the game, you've had a lot of disappointments. If you love the game, you've had a lot of thrills. And if you love the game, the one thing I know about baseball is this is how beautiful this game is. The one thing I know about it is the longer I'm in it, the less I know about it. I'm telling you, this game is absolutely unbelievable. You know, I played them all. I played football, great football player, All-American basketball player. And by far, this is the most beautiful game of all because nobody knows it. You've just been around it longer than other people. Now, as far as the X's and O's, you know, X's and O's in basketball are important. X's and O's in football are very important. X's and O's in baseball don't mean a damn thing.
Nope. On any given day.
No, we got people in the stands every night at a Sox game who X's and O's wise can run a Major League Baseball game. You don't have that in football. You don't have that in basketball.
Right.
But you got it in baseball. The key in baseball is having guys get out of them what they have in them.
Right.
And that's why you take a guy like Joe Maddon. That's why you take a guy like we got now. We got the right guy trending us in the right direction going forward, and that's Rick Renteria.
I think so.
So we have in Chicago, we got two of the greatest managers, in my opinion, because they get what's in these guys. Look at our guys last night, trailing 6-0, all of a sudden, hell, once we win the bet, and we can win a game in the ninth.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I don't know Rick Renteria at all, but just from watching him and hearing him talk, and I would want to play well for him. I wouldn't want to disappoint him.
You, knowing you, you would love him. I can tell you that right now. You would love him. He's the real deal. He's genuine. There's nothing fake about it. You know, I love Robin like a son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all love Robin.
Sure.
Robin's my second all-time favorite White Sox player. But
his number one would be Big Hurt?
Mark Burley.
Mark Burley, all right. Mm. Nice.
I would have guessed Todd Frazier after what we heard last year.
Todd, I tell you what, I love to watch him play. We talked a little bit after the game last night. He asked me, he said, did you give me stay fair on that one? I said, yeah, I did.
Yeah, stay fair, stay fair. Stay fair. Hey, Dog wanted to say hi. He worked with you over at Sports Channel.
Sports Vision, Ken.
Sports Vision.
I was on the floor crew with you at Sports Vision years ago when we were doing the...
Boy, you know, you're in diapers then.
Yeah, I was just a young man. But my father, Dale Julin, was the director, and you had found out, and you actually used to call me Doogie. I don't know if you recall that, but that's what you called me, and you found out I was a musician, and you said to me one day, he said, Doogie, I only know the words to two songs, the National Anthem and Boney Maroney.
That's right. Boney Maroney. I played in the golf tournament called the Music City Open in Nashville, and that's where they had a baseball player, they had a professional golfer, and they had a, you know, country and western entertainer. So I had Chet Atkins, who was a pretty good, you know,
guitarist. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
himself and Bob Murphy and myself and one of they call the Tennessee Colonels, you know, the big donors.
Mm-hmm.
So after the format was, after you played the round, you went to this huge tent that sat like maybe 3,000 or 4,000 people in there, huge. And the celebrity would get up with the country and Western entertainer, and they'd go on stage. And the whoever the entertainer was, they would play their instrument or sing their song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so now they get up, and Bobby Nichols was there, professional golfer, and he was sitting in the front row. And I guess Bobby had heard me sing Boney Maroney one time. So he started, hey, I'll sing Boney Maroney. So listen to this. How about this for having three guys play guitar for you? I had Chet Atkins, Roy Clark, and Jerry Reed.
Holy smokes.
Wow. Now, how about that?
And you laid a Boney Maroney on the crowd.
And I laid a Boney Maroney on them, and I say, it brought the crowd down. I mean, I was stomping my foot. I got a guy named Boney Maroney. And now, when I finished, they said, more. And I told Jerry Reed, I said, Jerry, I only know one more song. He said, what's that? I said, Star Spangled Banner. He said, get your ass out of here. No, I'm just saying, it's been a great ride.
Oh, yeah, for all of us, too. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's not summertime until I turn on the TV and I hear the hawk.
All right, guys.
Anytime you want, you know, I know you got enough, you do enough broadcasting as it is, but you're welcome on this show anytime. And just wanted to say hi and say thanks and congratulations I know it's not 100% over, but on a great career. And
thank you very
just,
much.
And being a good steward of the game of baseball.
Thanks,
that's,
guys.
That's
talk
important.
To you later.
All right, Hawk. Take
care.
Thanks,
Hawk.
Bye-bye. Steve Dahl and Hawk Harrelson from the Steve Dahl Show. Up next here on White Sox Weekly, we're going to hear an interview that Connor did with Ben Badler from Baseball America regarding the White Sox recent signing of Luis Robber. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Steve Cashel in this week for Connor McKnight. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field as the White Sox take on the Texas Rangers on Saturday, July 1st. The first 20,000 fans will receive a White Sox Hawaiian shirt presented by Beggar's Pizza. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. You know, a few weeks ago, the White Sox signed highly touted Cuban prospect Luis Robber. Connor McKnight got the inside info from Ben Badler of Baseball America. Here's that interview.
First, and probably the biggest question White Sox fans have right now is how, in the name of all that's holy, are we pronouncing Luis Robert?
I've always heard it pronounced as Luis Robert.
Fair enough.
From, you know, people, including people in Cuba, everybody else I know, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like I'm in Boston and how I pronounce words here, or other people here pronounce words a little different than people in Chicago or North Carolina pronounce words. So, but I've always heard as Luis Robert.
Well, then we will go with Luis Robert until I guess Luis tells us differently. Ben, tell me how you've been over this for a couple of days now, and well, really longer than that. How did the decision come down for Luis Robert to sign with the White Sox? You have been doing Robert for a while. How did it come down between the White Sox and Cardinals? What were the last couple of days like, as far as you know?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, it sounded like, you know, the teams that were in on Robert were most of the teams that were kind of already were already over their international bonus pools, mainly the Padres, the Astros, the Reds, the A's. I think at a certain point, it probably just got a little bit too rich for those clubs. I mean, all those teams were very aggressive on him. They're, you know, the Reds and the A's both sent their GM down to the Dominican Republic to see him in person at private workouts. But it sounded like most of what I was hearing the last couple of days was Cardinals, White Sox. You know, those teams were being very aggressive on him, and it sounded like it was down to those two teams. I mean, I don't know exactly what was being offered, but I would imagine it. It's probably pretty close, and it sounds like the White Sox kind of separated themselves just at the end here today.
You wrote, we're talking with Ben Badler of Baseball America. You can follow him on Twitter, @BenBadler. He's got the name for the handle, which means he's important On May 18th, you wrote that the White Sox would be sacrificing more to get him. Obviously, with the changes in sacrificing more than other teams, I guess, with the changes in how we go about getting international products into the major leagues now, can you kind of describe what you meant by that and why, in your opinion, they chose to sacrifice more, like you wrote?
Right. So, yeah, like I was saying, it's the teams that were always going to be in the mix for Robert were the teams that had already gone over their international bonus pools and really had done so last year on July 2nd when the international signing period opened. A lot of other teams, you know, were already under a penalty for having previously gone over their bonus pools. So, like the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Yankees, you know, they couldn't offer him more than $300,000 anyway. So they were out of the mix. Other teams are planning to be aggressive this year on July 2nd and sign 16-year-old kids out of the Dominican Republic and Venezuela for $1 million, $2 million, $4 million. So they couldn't sign Robert right now unless they were going to, you know, give up those commitments, which wasn't going to happen. So the White Sox were kind of the aberration of the group because they hadn't already gone over their bonus pool. So the teams that had already gone over, you know, they were already – they already knew that they were going to be going the next two signing periods without being able to sign any international amateur player for more than $300,000. Whereas the White Sox weren't in that penalty range quite yet. So by going over, that actually triggers penalties. So they're now going to be in that same penalty box of not being able to sign anyone for more than $300,000 for 2 years once this signing period closes on June 15th. I think the White Sox looked at it as saying, look, this is we're clearly in a rebuild right now. And, yeah, it is a big opportunity cost to be giving up to sign Luis Robert. But on the other hand, he's, you know, 19. He's turning 20 in August. And this is a guy who's going to help them at the major league level a lot faster, you know, even though he's probably like a low A to high A type player right now.
Sure.
He's going to get there a lot faster than any 16-year-old kids that they might sign out of the Dominican Republic or Venezuela either this year or next year.
So obviously this changes the White Sox outlook and ability to outlay cash on an international level for the next 2 years, what with the penalties. But do you get the sense that, you know, with the acquisition of Yoan Moncada, with going out on the market and bringing in Jose Abreu, do you get the sense that this acquisition of Luis Robert changes the international marketplace's opinion on the White Sox since, you know, over the last decade, 15 years or so, it has gone back and forth and been a little rocky?
You know, I think it probably changes, if anything, more than anything, I think just the opinion of White Sox ownership. I mean, this is a team that has never gone over their international bonus pool. You know, nobody goes over their draft bonus pool in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think back to the previous system where you could spend basically whatever you wanted in the draft before the draft bonus pools were in place, but they had these kind of like recommended slot values from the commissioner's office. The White Sox never really were a team to go over those slot values. So that, you know, that certainly jumped out to me that, I mean, the White Sox, you know, international scouts with Marco Patti and then obviously Rick Hahn and Ken Williams must have made a very compelling case to ownership to get this deal done, because I mean, if it's, you know, $25 million, they're going to have to pay another $25 million in tax. I mean, that's a $50 million commitment for a 19-year-old who's, you know, going to need probably a couple of years in the minor league. So, I mean, the White Sox have definitely been more aggressive on the international market in the last couple of years. They've been giving out seven-figure bonuses to guys like Micker Adolfo, Josue Guerrero, Franklin Reyes, some other guys that they have in the system. So now they're going to have to shift strategy a little bit and try to find some bargains and more under the radar or overlooked guys in Latin America for the next couple of years.
Ben Badler of Baseball America joining us here on White Sox Weekly. So what kind of player do they get in Luis Robert? What kind of – who does he comp to? I hate player comps. I hate asking you guys for player comps because they can be so dangerous. But the will of the people has spoken. They want their player comps. What does he look like? What does he possess? What does he need to work on? And I think you mentioned low A, high A-ish kind of start. I wonder what his horizon looks like to you.
Yeah, I mean, he's what stands out immediately. I mean, I'm sure you know you guys have all seen the videos of him, and he's just physical and very lean, athletic type body. I think that certainly jumps out the most, the physicality, the athleticism. He's got outstanding bat speed. He's got plus raw power. It's a pretty sound swing, too, from the right side of the plate. And he moves very well for his size, too. You know, I think the upside is a guy who, you know, maybe can play center field and potentially be a middle-of-the-order bat, which I'm sure is what the White Sox are looking at him, given the price tag on him. But you know, the risk is in. I've seen him since he was 16 years old, and you know, to his credit, I mean, he's always been a very high-level performer, whether it's against kids his own age at international tournaments. He was at an 1800 tournament. He was 16 years old the first time I saw him playing for a Cuban junior national team. He was the leading the Cuban league in on base percentage and slugging when he left this year. Granted, the league has been very watered down by so many players leaving, but you can't overlook the performance. But I think probably the biggest risk that I've seen on him is just swing and miss tendencies, whether it's chasing high fastballs or expanding the strike zone sometimes against breaking pitches. And the quality of the pitching that he's facing in Cuba is not very good. I mean, even in their top league, most guys there right now are probably throwing mid-80s type fastballs. So that's some risk. And then I think just it remains to be seen how his, just how his body develops. I mean, he's very lean right now. When I saw him a couple of years ago, I thought, all right, this guy's just going to be a physical monster and put on, 20, 40 pounds on his frame and move to an outfield corner. But he's stayed pretty lean. I think he's gotten even faster since he's left Cuba. So I think there's some chance that he might be able to play center field. Probably depends on, who else the White Sox have, in center field or on the corners by the time he is ready, whether he plays center or moves to a corner. But I think he doesn't have a great arm, so it'd probably be left field if he does go to a corner. But, if he does go to left field, I certainly think he has the athleticism, the range to be an above-average defender over there too.
Where does he fit on your guys' ranking of the White Sox system as it stands now and kind of place him in a top 100, I guess, prospect-wise? I mean, obviously the Sox have added a ton in the prospect development system like Moncada and Kopech, Giolito, Lopez, and they had Fulmer. That's probably a top five one way or another, depending on how you slice him. Where does Robert fit?
Yeah, I mean, we have Yoan Moncada as our number one prospect in baseball right now. So he'd be behind him. And I don't think he's as good as Moncada was coming out when Moncada initially signed with the Red Sox. Right now we have Ronaldo Lopez at 23, Michael Kopech at 24. He'd probably be somewhere, to me, I'd probably put him above those guys, but with the caveat that I'm probably, and I like Lopez and I like Kopech, but for me, I probably have those two guys a little bit lower just because I'm a little bit more risk averse on pitchers, but
sure.
I think this guy is certainly going to be, I would imagine, going to be in our top 50 prospects when we shake it all out. I mean, he's not going to be like a top 10 prospect like Moncada was from the time that he signed, but he's certainly going to be one of the better prospects in the game. You're going to see him on our top 100 list right away.
And those lists come out pretty quickly, right? I mean, that's you've got that coming out. The whole international signing period is going to be evaluated by Baseball America soon. And you guys have draft coverage throughout the year, but that's all getting hot and bothered right now.
Yeah. We'll have probably our midseason top 100 updates coming out right around the Futures game in July. Like you said before that, previewing the international signing period leading up to July 2nd, which I guess for White Sox fans will probably be a little bit quieter this year than usual because you're not going to see him sign anyone for more than $300,000. But
you can just can just listen to the podcast of this interview and everything will be fine. That'll take him right through.
Yeah, and it's it'll be interesting to see what if they make any other moves because look, the signing period is still open until. The signing period is still open until June 15th. Yeah. So, hey, if they're willing to spend, $50 million, I don't know how much more they have in the tank to that they're willing to spend going forward. But to me, the way I see it is, it's certainly risky to go over your bonus pool for one player like Robert, and they did sign some obviously some other players last year on July 2nd,
right,
between Josue Guerrero, Anderson Comas, Luis Mieses, some other guys. So, but to me, there's some other interesting Cuban players out there. Certainly nobody to the level of Luis Robert, but it'll be interesting to see if maybe they sneak somebody else in before the period closes.
That's Baseball America's Ben Badler. Up next, we will hear more from White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, Nick Hostetler, on this past week's White Sox draft picks. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. This is White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Steve Cashel in for Connor McKnight this week. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field as the White Sox take on the Oakland Athletics on Sunday, June 25th. It's Southpaw's birthday, and the first 7,500 kids will receive a Southpaw bobblehead presented by Mercury, Chicago's Skyline Cruise Line. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. You know, we have heard from Nick Hostetler, who is the White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, a couple of times so far in this show. Now let's check in with Nick again for a wrap on day three of the MLB draft.
What can you tell us about Larry King's kid?
He played at IMG. His name's Chance King. He played at IMG in Tampa. We talked to Dennis Gilbert, and Dennis and I spoke about him briefly, and he was still unsure of his college commitment as today when I talked to Chance, but he was excited to be drafted, and he's a tall, skinny, projectable right-handed pitcher.
How many A's kids did you end up taking?
One.
We took
Angelo in the 40th round, and excited. Now, a few A's kids were drafted this year, Donovan Williams, and I think there was one other one. I was out of the room at the time, but it's awesome to see those kids get an opportunity, and even though it's a 40th round and Angelo's not going to sign, he's going to go to school. It's great for these kids to be recognized. It's great for them to have their name in print, to always say they were drafted by the Chicago White Sox. And he's a great kid, and we make sure we take our ace player. They have to meet a lot of different standards, obviously on the field stuff, but grades in school, attendance in school. So there's a lot of stipulations they have to meet to be considered to be drafted.
So a lot to pick through today. Any highlights of the day?
Yeah, today was this is not my favorite day of the draft. Yesterday is. I like rounds 3 to 10. 11 to 40 can get a little bit overwhelming. Will Kincannon, our 11th round pick, is a big power arm righty from Indiana State that we were excited to get. We actually worked on him last night right after we were finished. We made a couple calls and made sure we were in position to take him. Alex Destino, a left-handed hitter, outfielder from South Carolina, big power. He came to our workout here and worked out for us, and really liked what we saw. At one point in the year, we had him in the third round. He started to slump, so we dropped him a little bit, but we were pretty excited to get him there. Tate Blackman, the second baseman from Ole Miss, is another one. Obviously, it's a redundant comment of mine with the universities and colleges. We took a lot of college kids this year, and not by choice, not by design. It just kind of fell that way. But those are guys that really jumped out off the page, when we were happy to get them where we got them.
There was, I think, at one point through 30 rounds, you had 29 college kids.
Yeah.
And the one kid who played water polo.
Yeah, how about that, huh? There was a time in the second round, the third round, where we were targeting a high school guy and got picked. We got picked three different times on high school players. It happens. There's a point in the draft where there's usually runs on high school players, and there's a small window you can sign these guys. They're usually before the fifth round, just because of the bonus stipulations. It's hard to sign them afterwards. So once we get after that, usually it's going to be mostly college. But we had to make sure that we were in position to take a few of those guys. It just didn't fall right, which kind of I love who we got. It still kind of hurts me a little bit with my high school roots.
Tom Crean, the basketball coach, took his son.
I did. Riley's a right-handed pitcher in Bloomington, Indiana, signed to go to the University of Indiana. I actually saw Riley pitch prior to me coming up for the draft. Riley was 86 to 90. He threw a good breaking ball at 78. There's a lot of projection, Riley, 6'4". Tom has become a close friend of mine. We've talked in detail about it, and I know Riley's looking at some different options. He's going to go to school, but he was also on our area code team. The breaking ball for us shows us, because of how hard he throws it, that there's projection with the fastball. But it was an exciting time. I had a chance to call him, and they sent me a video when he got taken. And it pulls at my heartstrings to watch a kid get drafted and do the excitement and the family and the parents and everybody. The only problem with his uncle being Mr. Harbaugh. me being a Buckeye fan, that's the only part of it that hurts, Merkin. But I have great respect for Jim Harbaugh and that family and Tom Crean, so I was excited that we were able to draft him.
You said with Chance King, you're not sure if he's going to go to college or play pro?
Yeah, I think he's going to end up going to school. Okay. He had not decided on his college commitment yet.
Picked a third guy from Louisville, Logan Taylor.
We took a run on Louisville players. They're good thing they're good this year. between Louisville and I think we took two Missouri State guys. We took a couple South Carolina guys. Logan Taylor can really run. He's a starting center fielder for him. He's a 70-80 runner. He's a leadoff, top-of-the-order type guy. And look, a solid senior where we got him. We were pretty excited to get Logan. It gets hard when you get in the seniors. They get picked over pretty quickly because of the discount and the way the pools are set up. So for Logan to be there where we took him in the 16th round, we were pretty happy to get him.
Did you go to Zach Birdie for input on those
guys?
I did
not. I stay away from Zach. I got Zach for some recommendations one time, and man, we about an hour later, we finally got into the actual question I asked him. I love Zach to death. He is a high. He's just. I got a high motor. But we didn't ask him on any of them. It is kind of fun to see those guys kind of feed off each other. When I just found out today, Lincoln Hensman and Cade McClure have been roommates since their freshman year, and I had no idea that. So there's some things that, you almost can know too much sometimes about a player, and I like to keep, while the makeup and all that's important, it's part of it, but I like to be able to evaluate the player on the field for him.
You got a couple of guys who are going to be in the College World Series and kind of anxious to watch them out there?
Yeah, I wasn't planning to go to Omaha, and I think maybe now I probably should, especially if TCU and Louisville match up. If they match up, I'm going to have to. I've never been to the College World Series, and I've always watched it on TV, and as a kid growing up, I remember the Warren Morris home run for LSU and him going around the bases like crazy. So I'd like to go. I think maybe if they match up, I'm going to go. But I did tell Evan Skaug last night that if one of those Louisville pitchers hit him, that he can pay them back pretty soon when they get teammates together. So it's exciting to watch. It's fun to watch. I mean, it's always nice to click on the TV and they're talking about some of your draft picks.
Did Rick do all the scouting on the last catcher that you took?
Yeah, that was all Rick. Rick used that for home games to get him home. But, yeah, it was. It's always good to get a local kid, and to give them the notoriety of having a solid, successful high school career. And, we like to do those things for local kids in certain parts of the draft.
He's going to go to college?
He's going to go to college, yeah.
Overall, how would you? I know it's first take, but how would you characterize the draft?
Yeah, picture? I'm going to sound cliche when I keep saying, when I say we're excited about it, because no scouting director is going to stand up here and say they hated it. If I do, I should be fired tomorrow. But we were really excited with the adjustments and how I was more proud of the way our staff was prepared. Our guys were prepared. We were ready for the curveballs that were thrown. There were a few curveballs during the draft that were thrown at us that we had to adjust. I was really proud of how prepared our staff was. They did a great job this year of getting us ready. And we added high-impact, power middle-of-the-order bats that really control the strike zone. And that was really our key. We started adding some guys that could run today, and we had some big power arms. Hopefully a few of those develop into starters, but we definitely got some really solid big-time bullpen pieces today.
That's White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting Nick Hostetler with his draft wrap-up. Up next on White Sox Weekly, we're going to have our farm report. I'm Steve Cashel in for Connor McKnight. You're listening to WLS AM 890. Welcome back, everyone, to White Sox Weekly. I'm Steve Cashel in for Connor McKnight this weekend. Have you ever wanted the chance to enjoy a picnic in the outfield of Guaranteed Rate Field? Meet 2017 White Sox team members and talk to White Sox alumni. Now is your chance. Join us on Sunday, June 25th for Picnic in the Park. All proceeds benefit White Sox charities. To purchase tickets, visit whitesoxcharities.org. Time for this week's Farm Report. Last night, the AAA Charlotte Knights beat the Indianapolis Indians 12-4. The Knights, led by home runs from Dan Hayes, Yoan Moncada, Nick Delmonico and Carson Blair. Yoan Moncada finishing the night going 4-for-4 with the home run and 4 RBI. Tonight, the Knights face the Indians again with first pitch at 6:05 Central Time. Carlos Rodon back on the hill for the Knights as he continues his journey back to the White Sox. And back to the big leagues in the game you heard earlier today between the White Sox and the Blue Jays from Toronto. Let's take you through the highlights right now. Well, the White Sox getting off to another good start today, putting 2 runs on the board in the top of the second for starting pitcher Mike Pelfrey. Todd Frazier in the DH role today started the scoring on one swing.
Here's the 3-1. Swing and a long one to left. Tagged, bagged. Hello, Canada. 1-0 White Sox.
Frazier's 11th home run of the season, and Matt Davidson followed that with this off Jays starter Marcus Stroman.
0-2 the count. A swing and a long one left center field. On the move, Dwight Smith looks up. Geigel back-to-back. 15th home run for Davidson. 2-0 White Sox.
Yeah, and Davidson's 5th in his last 6 games, and the 4th time the Sox have gone back-to-back deep this season. Blue Jays got one of those runs back in their half of the second when Ryan Goins delivered with 2 men on.
The 1-2 pitch, swinging a fly ball. This is charged right center field. On the move. Hansen not going to get it. It bounces over the wall, though that would have scored 2. It's a ground rule double. Home Morales to Lewinsky has to go back to third base.
Well, it stayed 2-1 Sox till the 6th inning when Jose Abreu led off the inning with this shot.
2 balls, 2 strikes. Stroman sidestep kick, the 2-2 to Abreu. Swinging a long one left center field. This is going to split the gap to the track. It's gone. A line drive home run to left center field. 3-1 White Sox. He pulled the hands in and still hit it out.
Yeah, the strength of Abreu, his 11th home run of the season. Meanwhile, Sox starter Mike Pelfrey was cruising. He retired 10 in a row before giving up a single in the 6th to Kevin Pillar, but got out of it with this.
Now look at first, the 2-1. A swing and a double play ball, perhaps up the middle. Anderson has it, steps on the bag. The shortstop throws to first. At 6 unassisted on the out at second. 6-3 on the back end of that double play.
Yeah, and then he had to face the number 3 batter in that Jays lineup, the always tough Jose Bautista.
3 balls, 2 strikes in the 3-2 with 2 outs. Pop them up. Who wants it? Right side of the infield. Abreu tells Yomer Sanchez, get away from me, and makes a catch, and that'll do it.
Yeah, great job by Pelfrey's going 6 complete innings, surrendering just 1 run on 4 hits, and he left it up to the Sox bullpen, which did get into some trouble in the 7th inning.
Big pitch here on 1-0 to Smith. White Sox looking for a double play grounder. 2 on, 1 out, and the 1-0. A swing and a shot up the middle. That squeezes through for a hit. It's going to be a 1-run ball game. Smoke coming home. Throw coming home offline, grabbed by Abreu. White Sox now lead 3-2.
Well, fortunately, Sox reliever Tommy Canely came in. He ended that Jays rally.
Sox just want to swing a double play ball to short. The 2-for-1 on the first. They turn it. 6-4-3 on the inning-ending double play. Give him the cape. Pull a rabbit out of your hat. Canely going to the dugout. White Sox lead 3-2.
Yeah, great job by Tommy Canely in this one. And the Sox then added to their slim lead in the 8th inning. Alan Hansen singling again in that leadoff spot, doing a great job since signing on with the White Sox. Later got the 3rd with Todd Frazier standing in.
1 ball, no strikes on Todd Frazier, the 1-0. Swinging a jam shot on the ground to 3rd. Donaldson had it, dropped it, safe at home plate. Frazier's on in an error by Donaldson. He was going to get the run at 1st and close out the inning. 1 run scores. That's an error on the third baseman.
Yeah, 2nd error of the game on Jays third baseman Josh Donaldson. Sox led it 4-2. They added another in the 9th inning thanks to a leadoff double by Tim Anderson and 2 consecutive bunts.
1-1 the count, 1 out. Runner at 3rd, and he's showing bunt, and he gets it down. This is a beauty. Home, no problem. With Anderson, a throw to 1st, wide. It goes down the right field line. Tracking it down at first base with no problem as Sanchez has a run batted in. A sacrifice bunt. He's safe on an errant throw all the way to 2nd base. Nicely done. 5-2 Sox.
Yeah, great execution by the White Sox, who built the lead to 5-2 with closer David Robertson finishing things off with a perfect 9th inning.
1 ball, 2 strikes, the 1-2 to Smoke. Inside corner, strike 3. This game has come to an end. White Sox come into Toronto and grab yesterday's game 11-4 and win this afternoon 5-2 and go for the sweep tomorrow. How about that?
Yeah, Sox winning it 5-2, taking the first two games of this three-game series in Toronto. And that will do it for this week's White Sox Weekly. Many thanks to White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting Nick Hostetler, White Sox GM Rick Hahn, Hawk Harrelson, White Sox catcher Kevin Smith, Ben Badler from Baseball America, and our very own Steve Dahl. I'm Steve Cashel in for Connor McKnight. We'll talk with you again tomorrow for White Sox Baseball. I'll have the pregame show beginning at 11:35 until Ed and DJ take over for the first pitch at 12:07. So long, everybody.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.